This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Discuss the extent to which one is obligated in the mitzvah of kibud av v'em, and I think we were all surprised at the extent to which it goes, what really is expected of one. And we discussed the basic principle behind the mitzvah of kibud av v'em specifically and kovod in general. We talked about hakoros hatoiv as kovod being an expression of hakoros hatoiv, of kovod being the way in which one treats a person whom one is unable to repay a very great debt. That really is what kovod is. You want to define honor? It's the way one treats a person to whom one is unable to repay a very great debt. I raised the point at the beginning of the shiur, which Gene Drutman kindly reminded me at the end of the shiur that I didn't come back to clear up, and I promised that I would do that before we went on with tonight's shiur, which continues to be part of the series that we're busy discussing at the moment. And that was the question of the submerged aggression that one finds so often in children towards their parents. The way in which it isn't to be handled, I'm not talking about handling it among non-Jews or about people who are not religiously motivated. That, unfortunately, Gene, where's Gene? That's unfortunately your business. My business is just to work out how to do it among people that are connected with Torah in some way or another. And the way not to do it with people who are connected to Torah is to start hacking kibud av v'em, you know, you've got to cover it and so on. I mentioned it's certainly not the way to do it is to have it out with your parents, and it's certainly not the way to get the client to start talking about his parents and saying all sorts of lashon hara about his parents. That isn't allowed. So what does the counselor do? Here he's got a young man or young lady. A lot of his problems are the result of a submerged aggression that they feel towards their parents, and he can't even discuss it with the child. He's not even allowed to ask the child questions and get the child talking. And what one has to work, actually, the whole of last week's shiur really answered it, but I didn't make the point clearly enough. What one has to work on is to understand the relationship between debt and the debt that the child owes to the parent and what the parent owes to the child. One has to teach the person what kibud av v'em is in essence. Our whole religion is becoming stifled by formalism, by throwing around formula and quoting paragraphs and quoting dinim, and this is what it says and this is what you must do, and we're becoming more and more automated in our religion and less understanding in what we're really trying to do. And I was saying to some people just over the Shabbos, the extent to which while we're busy worrying about the formulas, the foundations are rotting away. The very foundations under which our whole religion stands and on which it's built and on which everything. As I said this morning at the late issue, while we're busy arguing about whether you buy your meat from that butcher or from that butcher, kibud av v'em we're forgetting about, all these other things which are the pillars of Yiddishkeit, everything else stands on this. That slowly is rotting away while we're not even noticing. We're too busy with the formalism. And to turn kibud av v'em into a formula is part of that same tendency and part of that same danger. You must honor your parents. That's not what it is. If you're teaching the principle of kibud av v'em, and that's what a counselor then has to do, and that is the way one counsels a person who feels aggression towards a parent, you build up what you owe the parent. And the fact is, you sit there and you look at a parent, no matter what that parent does to you, basically you're looking at the person who's responsible for every breath of life that you're taking. So how can you go and get angry? How can you go and get upset? Who are you getting upset at? Who are you getting angry at? It's just total egoism to get angry altogether. And the aggression has to be relieved not by finding an outlet for the aggression. You don't need to find an outlet in the aggression. The aggression only develops because a person doesn't feel his own indebtedness. That's all. A man with a big overdraft doesn't become aggressive towards his bank manager. Doesn't do it. He behaves meek and mild. And no counselor is going to find that he's suffering from submerged aggression against his bank manager. Talks about him with the greatest covered and is only too happy and feels very honored every time the bank manager smiles at him. That's it. The trouble is we don't look upon our parents as bank managers who own an awful debt which can never be repaid. We just look at them as some nuisance that the Ribbono Shel Olam has put on us that we've got to look after and still keep the dinim of Kibud Avayim as well. Or to use a more yeshivish term, they are the chefter of the mitzvah of Kibud Avayim. The object of the mitzvah of Kibud Avayim is a parent. No, so we've got to keep all the halachas, and those are the people on which we keep them. That's not what it is. Those are the people who own the debt which we cannot repay during their lifetime and after their death. That's just how it is. And if a person understands that and lives according to that and sees that, and it's reinforced by the counselling, the aggression disappears very, very quickly. Just melts away, disappears somewhere into some unknown place. And if there is any left over with the aggression, he should get himself a punching bag and he should punch and go and play soccer or something or swim. But it's got nothing to do with the parents. And as great as the obligation to honour a parent is, as we discussed last week, I ended off with the piece of Shulchan Aruch on which we start today, which is Chayev Adam Bichvoid Rabbi VeYirosui Yoseh MiBishel Aviv. As great as are the demands of Kibud Av Ve'Em, to the extent that you remember we learned in the Gemara in Kiddushin that it's virtually, not virtually, it is impossible to do it correctly. And so much so that one of the Amiroim said, happy is the man who's born after his parents are dead, or when his parents die, in the sense that happy is the man who never saw his parents, in the sense that at least he has a chance of being Mekayim in the mitzvah of Kibud Av Ve'Em. He has a chance of getting through his life without putting his foot wrong in terms of the mitzvah Kibud Av Ve'Em. Maybe he'll manage. That's the degree to which we saw the mitzvah of honoring parents, and the Shulchan Aruch opens up after dealing with the laws of honoring parents. Chayev Adam Bichvoid Rabbi VeYirosu Yoseh MiBishel Aviv. A person is obligated in the honor of his Rav and the fear of his Rav even more than he is with his father. Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. Again, what I'm saying tonight is 90%, 80 or 90% based on various shmus and of Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitzal. Again, there are things which not easy to say oneself. And virtually the whole thing, it certainly has its basis in Reb Chaim's words. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Why is it? What has a Rav given that a parent that is so much more than a parent? If we were correct last week that we defined kovod, we defined the laws of honoring as a development from the principle of Hakoras HaTov, that it's because of an indebtedness, a sense of gratitude, that one develops this concept of kovod. When you're unable to pay your debt, then you show kovod. That means that to a parent there's a debt which cannot be paid, therefore the degree of kovod is virtually limitless. And as limitless as it is, it's obviously not limitless, because there's something which is more limitless than that, and that's the indebtedness that one needs to show to a Rav. What is it? What did the Rav do after all? He taught you something, so if he wouldn't have taught you, somebody else would have taught you. You can't say that about a parent. You can't say, if I wouldn't have been born to these parents, I would have been born to somebody else. No, you wouldn't have been around at all if it wasn't for these parents. You didn't have any other second way of getting here. There was only one road for you, and that was the road you took. But a Rav, so this Rav taught you, or another Rav taught you, what difference does it make? And if no Rav taught you, you can look at the Sforim, you can pick up books, you can teach yourself. What is it to the extent, and even if nobody else could teach you, say he taught you. So do you owe him that much more than your professor, who taught you also wisdom, and he taught you the means of earning a livelihood, and he set you up on your feet? Doesn't, you're not chayev the kovod of your professor more than you're chayev the kovod of your parents? He doesn't say that there. He says a Rav, the person who teaches you Torah, that's who you're chayev to that degree. What did he do that it puts you in such a position that you're unable to repay? There's a Tosfos in Ksuvos Daf Yud Zayin. But the Gemara says, "Mevatlin Talmud Torah lo hitzaras hames." There are very few things for which one is permitted to stop learning Torah in order to do something else. The learning of Torah is a far more important mitzvah than any other mitzvah in the Torah, and in fact than all other mitzvahs of the Torah. When we talk about the learning of Torah, we're talking about each phrase that you learn is more important than all the other mitzvahs put together. Not each page, not each chapter. Each phrase is, in terms of value in mitzvahs, greater than anything else. the famous Mishnah that says, Loi am ha'aretz chosid. An am ha'aretz, an ignorant man, a person who hasn't learned, cannot become a chosid. He cannot be a righteous person. He cannot be a person on a high religious level. What's the reason that's usually given? Why can't an am ha'aretz be a chosid? So what's the reason that's usually given? Anybody know Pshat in the Gemara, in the Mishnah? How do we normally learn that? Loi am ha'aretz chosid. Any volunteers? He doesn't know what to do. If you're an Amoritz, you don't know. How can you be from if you don't know what the Torah says? The way we normally learn it. Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam, the son of the Rambam, learns it very simply and very differently. He says, how can he be a chosid if he didn't do the most important mitzvah of them all, learning Torah? What kind of a chosid is that? There is no mitzvah so important as learning, so what's he doing, the idiot? All sorts of other mitzvahs he's doing and Torah he's leaving aside. That's a real Amoritz and he can't be a chosid. There is no mitzvah which weighs up in terms of importance and value to the mitzvah of learning Torah, and consequently there are very few things for which one may stop learning Torah. If you're busy learning Torah, you are potter from most other mitzvahs. There are very few things that you have to stop learning your Torah for to then do. One of them is Hotzos Hames. One of the very rare exceptions is for a funeral. For a levaya, you can go. The Koshe asks Tosfos. Tosfos asks a question on this halacha. So in Maseches Derech Eretz, Omer Rabbi Akiva. In Maseches Derech Eretz, Rabbi Akiva said, Tchila as Tashmishai lifnei Chachomim. At the beginning of my apprenticeship to the Chachomim, when I started learning Torah, Po Nachas Hayisi Mahalech Bederech, I was walking down the road once, Umotzati Meis Mitzvah. And I found a Meis Mitzvah. A Meis Mitzvah is a dead body for whom there is nobody else to attend to except me. Then it's palti boy dalad milim, and I carried this corpse 4 kilometers. Ache evasiv leves akvoris, until I brought him to a cemetery. Can you imagine Rabbi Akiva, bichvedo veyatzmo, walking down the road carrying a corpse over his shoulders for 4 kilometers until he gets to the beis akvoris, to the cemetery? Uchashebosi veyatzesi dvarai lifnei Rabbi Lezer v'Rabbi Yoshua. And when I came to the Beis HaMedrash, when I returned to the Beis HaMedrash afterwards, and I put my words before Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, I told them what had happened. That's what I did. Omruli, they said to me, Al kol pesio ufesio ki ilu shofachto dam noki. On every step that you took, it's as if you spilt blood. So serious is the avera of every step of those 4 kilometers. Don't come here boasting what a wonderful mitzvah you did. You couldn't have done anything more wrong. Tosfos says, why not? He's allowed to be, or the reason that they get angry with him is because he wasted time. He should have been learning during that time, not carrying corpses around. And even though there was nobody else to attend to the corpse, and it was a meis mitzvah, they still said that wasn't allowed. So the one answer that Tosfos gives is that they believed, they felt that he should have buried the corpse there. There was no necessity to carry the corpse for 4 miles. Could have buried the corpse where it was. The second answer is given by Rabbeinu Yehuda Mikurvil. Dohoso mishum debitel atzmoi mishimush talmidei chachomim ka'omar. It's true that for bitel Torah, if you're going to stop learning Torah, you're allowed to do that, to go and bury a dead person. But he didn't stop learning Torah. They wouldn't have been angry if he stopped learning Torah. But what does it say? Tchilas tashmishai lifnei chachomim. It was the beginning of my servitude under chachomim. It was the beginning of my apprenticeship. I was serving the chachomim. For that, says Rabbeinu Yehuda Mikurvil, you're not allowed to waste, you're not allowed to stop, even for Yitzhas HaMes. The Godol Shimusha Yoser Milimudo, because the study of Torah is even, because the serving of a Talmid Chochem is even greater than the study of Torah. That's something the Gemara in Brochus learns out, in fact. Gemara in Brochus, Taf Zayin. This Rabbeinu Yehuda Mikurvil is a very important one to remember. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Gedoylo Shimusho Shel Torah Yosei Milimudo. The serving of Talmidei Chachomim is more important than the studying. Shenema, as it says in Melachim, Poe Lishol ben Shafat Ashe Yotzak Mayim Al Yedei Eliyahu. When the credentials of Elisha, the successor of Eliyahu, are presented, on what basis are they presented? Lomad Loi Nema doesn't say he was Eliyahu's Talmid. He doesn't say this Elisha, he was Eliyahu's best Talmid. He doesn't say that. Ela Yotzak, he poured water over the hands of Eliyahu. This is the man that used to be with Eliyahu and that used to wash his hands. Malamed shegedolu shimushu yosei milimuda. We see from here that the Torah regards shimush, serving of Talmidei Chachamim, is greater than the learning under Talmidei Chachamim. And this is very strange. Because if learning under a Talmid Chacham, if the relationship, if the Rav's Talmid relationship is a means to learning, which is the way we would normally look at it, then how can you say that that relationship is more important than the learning? And that for the learning you're not allowed to be Mevatel, you're allowed to be Mevatel Torah, you can stop the learning to bury a dead body, but you can't stop the Meshamish Talmidei Chachamim, that relationship between Rav and Talmid. If you have an opportunity to serve a Talmid Chacham, you don't stop that even to bury a dead body. Only if you're busy learning. So which is the cause and which is the effect? You've got to say, as crazy as it seems, almost the Talmud Torah, that the learning is a means of coming to the serving of the Talmid Chacham, but that's the ultimate, not the learning. The learning is just a means of establishing a relationship with him. Once you have that relationship and you're serving him, the serving of the Talmud Chacham is much greater. And that's a completely opposite way of looking at the teaching-learning relationship to the way we're used to doing. Normally we think that a student has to establish a relationship with a teacher, because without that he won't learn. And we're saying the opposite. A man has to learn because without that he won't establish a relationship with a teacher. That's how it comes out. That the ultimate is the relationship. The learning is one degree less. That needs to be understood. And the extent to this which is this is so is even further stressed halachically. Tanu Rabbonu, this is a Gemara in Brochus Daf Mem Zayin. Ezu Amoritz. What is an Amoritz? Well, how do you define an Amoritz? What is it? Gemara goes through various opinions and views, and the Gemara then says, Acherim Omrim, and others say, Afilu Koro Veshono. Even if a man has learned, he knows the whole of Tanakh, Veshono, and he knows the whole of Shas, Velo Shimesh Talmidei Chachomim, and he didn't have this relationship, this learning, personal relationship that we're discussing with Talmidei Chachomim, we will still define what that means, Shimesh Talmidei Chachomim. Hareze Amoritz. So you can have a man who knows it all. You can have a man who's learnt and who knows from beginning to end everything there is to know. But he wasn't Meshamesh Talmidei Chachomim. Hareze Amoritz. He's an Amoritz. Omer Rav Huna said, Halocha Kacherin. That's the Halocha. Rami Bar Chama Loi Azmin Alei De Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife. The Tani Safra V'Sifri V'Hilchete. Rami Bar Chama, when he used to have to his table Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife, imagine that. There was Rami Bar Chama sitting, and at a guest at his table was Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife, an Amoro. When it used to come to benching time, he wouldn't bench with a mezuman with Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife, even though he knew Sifro, Sifri and Hilchese. He knew it all. There wasn't a thing in Torah that Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife didn't know. But he held that he wasn't Meshamesh Talmidei Chachamim. He held that he picked it up himself, he learnt it himself, he didn't learn it from somebody, and therefore he had the din of an Am Haaretz, and the din is that with an Am Haaretz can't join in the mezuman. And so Rami Bar Chama used to have lunch with supper, whatever it was, with Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife. If there were only three people, Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife was not permitted to join in the mezuman. That's how far the halacha goes. It's claimed that the Gemara says further on that in fact Rami Bar Chama was wrong, and he didn't check up carefully enough, and Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife did have the din of a Talmid Chacham and not of an Amoritz, and it was for that Rava said that Rami Bar Chama died because he didn't join in Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife to a mezuman. Be that as it may, Rami Bar Chama believed that because Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife, and look, Rami Bar Chama wasn't a Rav. He's always called Rami Bar Chama. We don't even call him Rabbi. And Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife, that doesn't matter. What's important is that the one was Meshamesh Talmidei Chachomim, Rami Bar Chama was Meshamesh Talmidei Chachomim, he had this relationship, and he believed that Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife did not, and therefore he would not join Rav Menashe Bar Tachlife into a mezuman. We see the extent to which the type of amaratzus that results from not being Meshamesh Talmidei Chachomim, how severely this is taken. To the extent that you really can't join in a mezuman, no matter how much you know. Again, very, very strange. And very contrary to the way we're used to in our sort of Western civilization, where it's not, we're not interested here in the quantity of knowledge, we're not interested in what you know and how knowledgeable you are and what you've learnt and how much you learnt and when you learnt it. What we're interested in is, have you been Meshamish Talmidei Chachomim, whatever that means. And it's because of that, in fact, that there's the very tragic medrash about your Moshe Rabbeinu himself. This is a medrash rabbi in Pinchas, Parsha Kapalef. What did Moshe see to ask God for a successor immediately after the Torah gives the laws of inheritance? Since the daughters of Tzlofchad were permitted to inherit their father, Omar Moshe, I'm getting old and we're busy discussing inheritance. It's about time that I discussed my will with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Im habonos yorshos, if daughters can inherit their father, b'dinu sheyirshu b'nayis kavodi, then surely, said Moshe to God, my son should inherit my honor and take my position. Omar le'akadosh baruch hu, noitzer t'eina yorchal piria. The man who looks after the fig tree is the man who eats the fruit. A fig tree specifically, because the fruit doesn't last on the tree very long. And the birds get it and it starts rotting very quickly. The man who's there is the man who gets it, not the man who owns the fig tree. The owner comes too late. By the time the owner comes, the figs, if anybody's got a fig tree of their own, they know what I'm talking about. By the time you come, it's gone. It's the man who's there, the gardener, is the one who gets the figs. Your son sat and they didn't deal in Torah. That doesn't mean that they didn't learn Torah. There's no question that the sons of Moshe Rabbeinu were tremendously great Talmidei Chachamim. Yoshua Hirbo Sharetcho. Yoshua, what did he do? What's his credentials? He was excelled in serving you. The Hirbo Chorek Lecho Kovid, and he excelled in giving you honor. V'ayom Mashkim U'Mariv, and he used to be up early and go to bed late b'Beis Havad, in the meeting place Shulcho, in your Beis HaMedrash. V'ayom Masadir Esasaf Solim, when you came, you used to find all the chairs were arranged already. Who arranged them? Yoshua. V'hu Peres Esamach Tzaloiz. And he used to spread out the cloths and the curtains. Since he served you with all his strength, he is worthy of serving Israel and not losing his reward. And so you must take Yeshua bin Nun. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz is medayik from a Ramban in Shlach that there were many greater Talmidei Chachomim around than Yeshua bin Nun. There were many more learned men, and there were people of greater stature, and there were people of greater background and knowledge. But there was nobody who had served Moshe the way Yoshua did. And that was the factor that got Yoshua the kingdom after Moshe. It was for that Yoshua inherits Moshe. That Yoshua is considered the closest Talmud of Moshe. Not by how much knowledge he took from Moshe, but by how much he served Moshe. So again, we have a factor where the success of a Talmud, or the level of a Talmud, who's Moshe's closest Talmud? That should be the man who succeeds him, surely. The man who understands his derech, the man who understands his approach best. So how are we going to measure who's the best Talmud? Are we going to measure by an exam? No. Are we going to measure by who's the most intelligent? No. Are we going to measure by who, whatever you want, who you think was the most outstanding Talmud? No. We're going to measure by only one test. And that's the test of who was Masharet you. That's it. That's the one who will get it. Which is also strange. What is it here? What is this relationship which is measured not in terms of quantity of knowledge but in terms of Shimush? And I think here that there's a very important principle which might be the Pshat in Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, but it might be slightly different to what he's saying. The Gemara says in the Dorim Daf Lamed Ches, Omar Rabbi Yosi bar Rabbi Chanina, Loi nisna Torah ela l'Moshe ulazare. The Torah was in fact only given to Moshe and to his children. Shenemar, as it says, Ktav lecha, psol lecha, it says, you write, you hew out, ma psol tan shelcho af ktoven shelcho. Same as the hewing of the stone has to be, is yours, so the writing is yours. U'Moshe noag bo tovas ayin, and Moshe related to the Torah with generosity, Yisrael, and he passed it on to the Jews, he gave it to the Jews. Very strange statement. The Gemara carries on talking about it a little bit, but just even that statement of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chinina is very, very strange. Moshe is the only one who got the Torah, him and his children. Everybody else, it was thanks to Moshe's generosity that we got the Torah. What does that mean? We all got the Torah. We were all at Mount Sinai. And it's in this Gemara, I think, that lies the principle that I want to put to you. And that is that Torah, unlike any other study and any other learning experience, requires by necessity one dimension which is unique to it. And that's the dimension of Kabbalah. Kabbalah not meaning mysticism, but Kabbalah meaning that you receive it. The whole introduction to Pirkei Avot. Moshe kibel Torah mi-Sinai. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai and handed it on. It's the principle which I think we mentioned last week and the week before. Torah is the one thing which cannot be picked up. It's the one thing which cannot just be read somewhere. It's the one thing which one has to be mekabel. You have to receive it. If you haven't received it, it's not Torah. We'll discuss it a little bit more in detail, what that means. What is Torah? That's a big question. It would take many, many Motzei Shabbos to answer that. Perhaps that's what we've been trying to answer since the start of these shiurim and what we'll carry on doing for the rest of the time. But just one or two ideas. Torah, take learning of Torah. Is, and when I say Torah is, that's not all the Torah is. I'm just giving you glimpses from different angles of what Torah is. The Torah is the revelation of God's will and the experience of communion with God through a discovery and an involvement in a text. The text is not the be-all and end-all. The text is just the means. Torah is something which can't be put into words. Torah is something which can't be written down. Torah is something which can't be reduced to formulas. So we have the Torah Shebichtav, we have the written law, which is just the bare outlines written in such a way that any school child can get some kind of pleasure reading it. And in it are all the principles, hidden in it somewhere. And the rest wasn't written down and wasn't intended to be written down because it can't be written down. The rest is Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh means that discovery of Torah that comes through an authentic analysis of an authentic text. When you sit and you learn Gemara, it's not to know the words on the page that is important. That won't help you. What does it help you? You know the words on the page, so you don't understand them. You can't apply them because you don't understand them, and if you do apply them, you're going to be applying them all wrong. And so you know a few words on a page. What does it mean? Where's the religious experience of knowing a few words on a page? What is it all? And why is it that one can carry on being creative in Torah generation after generation, hundreds of thousands of people in each generation, each one being creative in Torah over and over again, if it can all be reduced to a text? It can't be reduced to a text. And in Torah what we're doing is that through an absolute skeleton text, absolute skeleton, by becoming involved in that skeleton text, by noticing every little thing and deepening one's involvement in it and analyzing deeper and deeper, by applying one's intellect and one's personality to the full into the text, one gets a little bit of a spark of a touch of what Torah is. The Torah is not what's on the page. What's on the page is only the gateway. Through that you're able to, that's the only means one's got of getting in. By analyzing the text you have a chance of getting in, of digging under. It's like a gold mine. You can say there's a gold mine under Johannesburg. It doesn't help you much. You've got to know where to get in. There are only a few places where you can get in, and if you try and get in the wrong places, you'll either have no success or you'll hurt yourself. There's a way to get into a gold mine, and there are only a few ways, and you've got to be led in. You've got to be told where to go. The text of Torah is merely the shaft down into the depths of Torah. It's there that we start. When you sit down with a piece of Gemara, you're on the surface. You're living in the ordinary world on the surface of things, and all of a sudden, as you start analyzing, you go down and down and down, and comes a time a couple of hours later where you are miles away from anything else that's going on in the world. You're deep, deep, deep underground. and you're really analyzing Torah, not just on the level of the text. The text is your entrance into Torah, it's not the Torah itself. And once one's dealing with things that are so deep and things which are so fine and things which are so implied but not stated, 99.99% of Torah is not stated. It's implied, it's suggested, it's hinted at. It's just minute aspects of suggestion. The Gemara that we've been busy with, in fact, the whole skill of reducing one's thoughts down to a minimum of suggestiveness. Just the bare minimum that you need in order to make yourself understood. That's how the whole Torah operates. Everything is written down in extreme brevity. In order to make sense of that, one needs a system, one needs to know how to do it. It's not an open book. One has to know how to do it. And if we look at the learning of Torah not only as the acquisition of knowledge, but also as the establishment of communion, I'm sorry to use such a word because it has all sorts of other connotations, but I can't think of a better word. The establishment, if you look at the learning of Torah also as the establishment of communion with God, not just as a means of getting to know what's there. If you want to know what's there, it can be, I always give the example, where's the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? Do we have one in this place? I shouldn't. Where's the black book? Ah, but this is one of four volumes. No, that's isn't there an ordinary one? Alright, so pass me a Chai Odom and a Chochmas Odom over there. Just a Chai Odom and a Chochmas Odom. Now this is a thanks. This is already not a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. This is already much bigger. There's the whole Torah. Everything you need to know about what to do is in here. And what about all this? Why do we need all that if we've got this? Everything a Jew needs to know about how to live is here. You can look it up. There's not virtually no situation which you will be confronted with in your lifetime that isn't covered in these two volumes. And it's relatively easy to understand. It can be or has been translated into English. And here's the Torah. What on earth do we need all this for? And this is a very inadequate library. The answer is that there's Torah. It's not just to know what's there that's important. It's to become a Talmid Chacham. In sense, to move out of being a Nam Haaretz at least. To move out of being an ignoramus. To start filling your head with thoughts of godliness. To start filling your head with depth. To start filling your head with real things. To start filling your head with deep analysis and true understanding. Not superficiality. And for that one needs learning, and for learning you need methodology. Even to read these books you need methodology. I said they're relatively simple, but somebody who's not trained in learning them will find it very difficult, whether in English or in Hebrew. But certainly when it comes to reading any of the rest of it, and to learning it and to understanding it, there needs to be training. There's no way that one can turn these very brief strokes of meaning into correct and true understanding without the system and without the method. So that's on the very simplest level where Kabbalah is necessary. And who's going to tell you what it means? There's only one person that can tell you what it means. That's the person who wrote it. There is nobody else who has any authority whatever to tell you what it means, because it's not intelligible to anybody else. And that's where the Kabbalah comes. I've got to be sure that I've been taught by somebody who's taught by somebody who's taught by somebody who wrote it. And otherwise I'm on dangerous ground. But there's another aspect to being Mekabel the Torah. You'll notice these Motzei Shabbos Shirim don't come from these forim. Although everything you need to know in your life is here, if this is all we had of Torah, as great as forim as these are, and they're extremely great forim, if that was the sum total of our Torah, there could be no Motzei Shabbos Shirim. God, in talking to Moshe in Mitzrayim, says, Dabru el kol adat Yisrael. Speak, and he says in the plural sense. He says, Dabru, you plural, speak to all the people of Israel. Rashi talks on the Chumash there, why it's in the plural, because Aaron was included in that. So Rabbi Yishmael asks, it's all very well that Aaron was included in that. But when God says, Dabru, v'chishneim ayu medabrim, did both of them talk simultaneously to the Jewish people? What does it mean, you both talk to the Jewish people? Doesn't it already say you singular must talk to the children of Israel? What does it mean that God is talking to Moshe
and Aaron in the plural, you both speak. Elokivan shaya Moshe medaber. When Moshe used to speak, Hoyo Aharon Markin Oznov Lishmoya Be'ema. Aharon, who was not much less great than Moshe, and was an older brother, and as knowledgeable, just not quite on the same level of Nevuah, and in some senses even greater than Moshe. We remember that when Aaron died, they mourned him for a longer time than they did when Moshe died. When Moshe used to get up to speak,
you know, you'll find very often today that you'll go, even unfortunately, among supposedly outstanding people, that a rabbi will get up and speak in a shul or whatever it is, and you'll find other rabbonim there take out a sefer and they start reading. They know everything he's saying already, so they're reading something else, they're learning something they don't know. Their time is so valuable to them that they can't afford to waste the 15 minutes or the 20 minutes that the other rabbi is busy talking. And certainly one finds it with people who are not even rabbonim. What does Aaron do when Moshe speaks? Even though he heard God telling Moshe in the first place, he's heard it all from God himself already. Now Moshe is speaking. So Moshe, Aaron, who also used to value his time tremendously, you'd think would take a Gemara and would start revising while Moshe is busy giving his shiuri. No, says the Midrash. Aaron, are you a Markin Oznov? He used to soften his ear and listen. Lishmea, to listen be'emo, with fear and trembling. And as a result of that, Marle Alova Kosov Kiilu Shomea Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This Midrash is terribly important. The Torah regards it as if Aaron heard it from God himself, even those things which he didn't hear from God, because that's the way he listened to Moshe. Here we have the essence of what Kabbalah means in Torah, what it means to be Mekabel Torah. To be Mekabel Torah requires the Midah. In other words, what we're saying now is that the Kabbalah, receiving Torah, is not just a learning process. The Kabbalah in Torah is a Midah, it's a characteristic, it's a human trait. It's a part of the human being, it's part of who you are. It involves a bit of modesty. It involves a bit of truthfulness. It involves a desire to learn. There's a midah called the ability to be mekabel. And the ability to be mekabel is that while the Rav is talking, to listen, the Ema, as if the Ribbono Shel Olam himself is talking. And we'll discuss in a moment why that's so important. We talked last week about how the parents form a partnership with the Ribbono Shel Olam that works with the Rav as well. You remember the famous Gemara, I've forgotten who it was that used to be Marbe all the Itim. Whenever it said S in the Torah, he used to learn something out of that. Whenever it used the word S, which doesn't really mean anything, he used to work something out what it meant, until he came to Et Hashem Elokecha Tiro, that you've got to fear God, and he didn't want to say anything else because that means that not only must you fear God, but there's somebody else that you must fear as well. So he stopped this whole system of figuring anything out from S, until Rabbi Akiva came along and said, "Oh, you're quite right. Every S comes to teach you something extra. Every time the word et appears in the Torah, it's there to teach you something more than the plain words mean." And I said, "So what do you do with et Hashem Elokecha Tiro? Who else must you fear but God?" Answers Rabbi Akiva, Talmidei Chachamim. They put into that same mitzvah of et Hashem Elokecha Tiro, I'll put the Talmidei Chachamim and the Gedolim of the generation into that same category. And one has to listen to them the way one's listening to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Absolutely the same. And if you can do that, then Ma'ale Olav HaKosuv, then the Torah regards it Ki'ilu Shomea Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if you are in fact hearing the Torah from God. Now we begin to come to something, and that is, I said that the only person who's, or the only one who is qualified to tell us what the Torah means is God himself. That means that the only one who really ever understood the Torah is Moshe Rabbeinu, because he's the only one who learned by God. He sat at God's feet, so to say, for 40 days and learned the Torah. He was the only one who could say to God, "What does this mean and what does that mean?" Anybody else must speculate. Moshe Rabbeinu had the author there himself. And our only way of learning Torah now, the only authentic way of learning Torah, let's think theoretically on the basis of this Medrash and on the basis of the Gemaras we've done so far, is to be mekabel from God. We have to receive the Torah from God. And unless we can receive the Torah from God, we have questionable authenticity. Says the Medrash here, Aaron, when he used to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu, since he used to listen with tremendous attentiveness and aima and fear, it was as if he was mekabel from God. It was as if he was receiving from God himself. Why?
I think because the depth of the Torah is infinite,
and the different levels of understanding of the Torah are infinite. The different levels from generation to generation of Rav and Talmud are infinitely wide and far from one another. The Gemara uses various images to describe that distance. One image is that if by the previous generation were like angels, we're like human beings. If the previous generation were like human beings, we're like donkeys. Various such images are given to describe the extent to which there is a gap between the earlier generations and the later, and this is in the time of the Gemara. There's no question that one of the biggest problems we face in the young Torah generation today is that we're dealing with a generation who had no contact with the pre-war generation. That the understanding of greatness is diminished. When you think of a great man, all you can think of is the greatest you've seen. You can multiply by 5 or 10 maybe, if you really have a good imagination, to get to what you consider great. But if you haven't seen greatness, what are your atzogas altogether? What are your horizons? How far can you see what greatness means? And fewer people have had actual contact with the previous generations. There are fewer people who actually lived then. And those who survived that period, those Gedolei Yisrael, those very few great people who survived that period, have virtually all died now. And there are not that many of the young people of today's generation who had to do with them, because until a few years ago, the Torah learning population was very small worldwide. You cannot imagine the gap between ourselves and them. And when you hear them talking about their teachers, if you didn't trust their integrity 100%, you would think they were exaggerating, by far, because it's just not possible to imagine. But since you know how meticulous they are about every word they use, you trust that what they're telling you is true. And since you've experienced yourself the difference between generations, you know what they're talking about. So when you listen, when I hear my Rabbeim talking about their Rabbeim, it's just something beyond comprehension. And that's only two generations ago. We're talking about the 1930s. My Rabbeim's Rabbeim, the 1920s and the 1930s. Those were the people. And they were already beyond our comprehension. What about the people who lived in the 1900s and the end of the last century and the early Achronim and the end of the Rishonim? There's just no way we can begin to understand who these people were at all. And each generation. So when we begin to understand the gap between the generations, how can I really hope to understand what my teachers are teaching me? Their understanding is much deeper than mine. Every word they use is calculated to convey a particular thing which I'm nowhere near the level to understand what they're even talking about. What chance is there? The only chance is if there's Kabbalah. And Kabbalah is that one sits and listens the same as you would listen if you were on Mount Sinai, hearing it from God. That's all. That's the only chance you have of hearing correctly. That's the only chance you have of giving the words sufficient attention to be able to understand them with some degree of depth. But if you start off with the assumption, well, he's also only human, then you finish. Then you might as well not listen, because there's no way you'll understand. That the initial assumption has to be that one's listening to Torah Hashem. And then there's a chance, if you're meticulous in your listening and he's meticulous in his teaching, there's a chance that you'll get some of it right. And that it goes back there. In fact, the Rambam, in his opening to his work, traces all the generations from Rav Ashi back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Rav Ashi, who was the last person mentioned in the Gemara, really, the person who edited the Gemara, put the Gemara together. So the editor of the Gemara, the Rambam, traces back his 40 generations from Moshe Rabbeinu. And he traces back Rav Ashi's teacher and his teacher and so on and so forth, right back to Yeshua and to Moshe. And he says at the end, Nimtzah, it emerges, Shekulam Mehashem Elokei Yisroel. That all these people I've mentioned, all these 40 generations, went before him. It was the fact that there was Kabbalah, that there was receiving, which was unique. And that was the unique thing about the giving of the Torah. Moshe received the Torah. Moshe kibel Torah misina. Moshe received the Torah on Sinai, and the most important element in the learning of Torah now becomes receiving it. Not picking it up, but receiving it. And receiving it is defined in the Midrash that we have of being merakech and oizen, of lending an ear ba'ema with trembling. It comes out that Kabbalah's Torah, receiving the Torah in essence, is being mevatel oneself totally, is totally nullifying oneself to the Torah one's learning. You can't sit and be self-conscious while you're learning. You can't sit and be thinking of yourself while you're learning. You can't sit and think of your own views and your own derochim and your own shittas while you're learning and try and figure out, does that fit in or it doesn't. You've just got to become totally non-existent while you're learning, and totally absorbed and involved in the learning for itself, in order for there to be Kabbalah. Just imagine how Moshe was on Sinai. Do you think he sat there listening to everything that God was saying, figuring out, now how does that fit in with what I learned yesterday, and how does that fit in with what I understand, and how does that fit in with what I said, and how does that fit in with the last book that I wrote? Nothing at all. When God's speaking, everything else stops, the rest of the world doesn't exist, and he is totally involved with one purpose, and that is understanding God. Whether he agrees or not is just irrelevant. Never mind that it's even a stupid thing to consider. It's irrelevant. What's relevant is just to apply total concentration during that period to understand every word that's being said, bearing in mind the brevity with which it's being said, and consequently the depth that lies behind every word which is being said. That was what was unique about God's learning from Moshe, and that's the element of Kabbalah that has to be in every generation thereafter. Giving that kind of unique attention and being totally absorbed in what it is that one's learning. And then one begins to understand when the Gemara and the Dorim said that Moshe, it was Moshe's generosity that he gave the Torah to the rest of Israel. Yeah, it was Moshe's generosity in the sense that he allowed others the experience of Kabbalah's Torah. That he allowed others the experience of receiving Torah. Because there was no way they could get that without him. They could pick it up, the Torah was written down, the Torah Shebichtav. He was in fact instructed to teach them, he had to teach them, he had to hand over certain things to them. But that experience of Kabbalah Sator, that there was no way they could get without them. It was thanks to Moshe's personal generosity that anybody else got that experience of being Mekabel Torah, of being able to completely nullify themselves and sit with Kabbalah, to be able to sit in and receive in the sense of what receiving means. And that bitul, that nullification, that self-nullification that needs to exist, is something which is developed through Shimush Talmidei Chachomim. That's exactly the kind of attitude and kind of relationship that is developed through the Talmid serving the Rav. You'll find many times in the Gemara when somebody asks, you'll find one man asks another in the Gemara, one Amora asks another, a kasha, a difficult question, and he says, I'll answer you if you help me on with my jacket. Or I'll answer you if you pass me my scarf. Well, what does he mean? What's the one got to do with the other? It means that you won't even understand it unless you are mevatel yourself to me, unless you nullify yourself to what I'm saying. When we've finished discussing, you can unnullify yourself again, and then you can look at it objectively. But if you want to stand a chance of understanding what I'm saying, it's necessary to nullify yourself. And it's necessary to subject yourself to me during that period. And that's why, first of all, pass me that jacket, serve me, and then I'll teach you. And then it comes out that, again, if one's looking at Torah, not just as a means to acquiring factual knowledge, because then it's only two books you need to know. But if you're going to look at Torah as the means of establishing a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, a means of getting close to God, a means of understanding what He's all about and what He wants from you, not just in terms of bottom lines, but in terms of whole attitudes. If one understands from Torah becoming involved in God and in godliness, then what one needs is the existential experience of learning. One needs the business of learning, the feeling of learning, not just the results of learning. And for that you need bitul. For that you've got to be mevatel yourself in order to be mekabel. And how do you develop that? Through shimush. Now one understands that for learning of Torah, you can stop your learning to go to the cemetery. That you can do. Because it's factual knowledge. You're not learning it now, you'll learn it later. But for Shimush Tamidei Chachomim, for those moments when you're enwrapped totally in being mevatel yourself to a Talmid Chachom, and to be totally enveloped by him and involved in the Torah which he's teaching, that you can't sacrifice a moment of. Because those moments are sufficiently rare as it is. Still, to sacrifice an opportunity that you have for anything, you don't do. Because during those moments you're experiencing communion with God. And while you're experiencing communion with God, you don't stop for anything. And those are the only moments, even more than in tefillah, even more than in davening. During those moments is one able to get close to God.
And lastly, the Gemara says in Bava Kama Daf Tzadi Beis, Amar le Rava le Rabba Bar Mari, Rava said to Rabba Bar Mari, Mono ho milta damri inshi. Where does the saying come from that people say, Chamra le Mare tivusa le Shakya? The wine belongs to the master, to the balabos, but our thanks go to the butler. Where does it come from? Is that a valid saying? Is it a sensible saying, or is it nonsense? Amar le says, no, it's correct. Dichtiv, as it says, V'somachto es yod cholov, God instructs Moshe to give smicha to Yeshua, to lean on Yeshua. The man Yishmun v'yirun koladas b'nei Yisrael, so the community of Israel will hear and will fear him. And it says, v'Yeshua ben nun malo ruach chokhma, ki somach Moshe es yodov olof. And Yeshua ben nun became wise because Moshe gave him smicha. V'yishmu elav kol b'nei Yisrael, and all the people of Israel listened to him, says Rashi. What does it mean? Chamra l'mare v'tivusa l'shakye. Hayayin shel melechu, the wine belongs to the king, to the balabos. V'hashoychim v'yisim marzikim toiv v'l'sar ha'mashke v'lo l'melech. But it's strange. The people who drink the wine thank the butler, they don't thank the king. It says, because v'yismech es yodov tolo ha'chochmo v'hagdulo b'moshe. The wisdom is credited to Moshe. The wisdom which Yeshua got is credited to Moshe. As if Moshe gave Yeshua the wisdom. But really it comes from God. And here we've got the same principle again. When you're mekabel Torah, you're not mekabel from your Rebbe. You're mekabel Torah from God himself. As the Rambam says, it's because of each generation being mekabel from the one before, that kulo me'ashem elikei Yisrael, they all receive Torah from God. So when a man is mevatel himself, and he's meshamesh, and he's learning Torah in that environment, and in that atmosphere, what he's learning from is directly from God, not from the Rebbe. And that's terribly important. And you might think, therefore, the Rebbe deserves less credit. And the statement isn't quite right of the wine of saying thank you to the butler. After all, it's the balabos's wine, it's God's Torah. Every Talmid learns Torah directly from God. God is his teacher. And God gives him the siyata dishmaya to understand, and the intellectual ability to understand. But he can't do it without the butler. He can't do it without being mevatel himself. He can't do it without kabbalah, without receiving. And you can't go up Mount Sinai and receive, nothing will happen. So who are you going to receive from? So you need a rav in order to receive. That's all you need the rav for. In order to be a receiver of Torah. In order to be a mekabel of Torah. In order to be meshamish. You need the Rav. So the Rav is the Mashke, is the Shaki, is the Bala Mashke. Not the Bala Mashke, is the Sara Mashke, he's the butler. The wine is in the cellar, it belongs to the Balabos, but that doesn't help you, you need to get to the wine. It's the Sara Mashkim, it's the butler who brings you the wine. So who do you say thank you to? To the Sara Mashkim. Says Rabbi Bar Mari, that's correct, it's correct to thank the Sara Mashkim, because he made it possible for you to receive the wine. And now we begin to understand that first paragraph in the Shulchan Aruch in the Hilchus Kovod Rav, that one has to show more kovod to a Rav than to a parent. Why? Because the Rav has made it possible not for you to learn Torah. So Rav just made it possible for you to learn Torah, so you would thank him, but that wouldn't be the end of the world. You thank him like you thank your other teachers. The Rav made it possible for you to learn from God. The Rav made it possible for you to be loymed me'ashem elokei Yisrael. The Rav made it possible for you to establish a direct relationship with the Ribbono shel Olam. That's what a Rav is. And look how contrary it is, lahavdil elef avdolos, to the Christian attitude of what a Rav, so to say, is.
he's an intermediary between you and God. Well, that is a shadchan. It's the Rav who brings the Talmud and God together. Directly together without him. It's just that the Talmud needs to be Makabel. And so he's Makabel from a Rav in place of being Makabel from Sinai. He can't be Makabel from Sinai. So he has to be Makabel from somebody who was Makabel from Sinai. So that the element of Kabbalah is there. Once the element of Kabbalah is there, now he can learn Torah directly from God. And the man who makes it possible for an individual to establish communion with God, that's a man that can't be repaid. Because there is nothing so great, there is no experience so important, there's nothing that gives a person such power and such ability and such knowledge and such awareness and such depth. There's nothing that brings a person closer to his true ideal and to that which he has to achieve. So the parents are the people that brought him into the world, but now what does he do? That doesn't mean he's going to make a success of it. That doesn't mean he's going to come out of the world a better person. For that he needs the Rav. For that he needs the Rav, and the Rav is the Makasher, the Rav is the person who connects him up to God. And for that there can be no thank you. And for that there can be no Hakoros HaTov really, excepting through COVID. And finally on this, the Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz adds that Rabbi Lezer, I think it is, who says in Gemara Sukkah that he's never said anything that he didn't hear from his Rebbe. And Chaim Shmuel Levitz says that's absurd, and he's a tape recorder, not an intellect. What kind of man is this that just repeats what he's heard? And especially Rabbi Eliezer, about whom it is said that he said the most amazingly revolutionary things, Rabbi Eliezer. So one of the people, says novice to Rabbi Nosson, one of the people who's accredited with having been most revolutionary in his learning, comes up with a statement, nothing I've said that I haven't heard from my Rebbe. That's absurd. And says Rabbi Chaim Shmuel Levitz, even if it's true, it would be undesirable. We don't want automates. We don't want carbon copies. We want original people. So what does it mean? So he said it means that he didn't say anything that he didn't believe that his Rebbe would also have said. That's the test of authenticity. One knows one's Rebbe sufficiently well to be able to say, now this is an original thought that I've got. I didn't hear this thought from him. But could he also have said it? Is it the kind of thing he would also say? If it is, you're on safe ground. If it isn't, don't say it. Because you're not on safe ground. You don't have the right to say the kind of thing which your Rebbe would never say. And says Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, that is the greatest Hakoros HaTov that there can be. A man who tests everything he says in terms of, is this what my Rebbe would have said? Is a man who's showing the recognition, he's showing that he understands that his way to Torah, his derech through Torah, is something which he achieved from his Rebbe. As original as he is, and as much as he might progress, and as great as he might become, one thing he knows at all times is when he's testing all the time, would my Rebbe have said it? He's tracing the Torah that he knows, even his new Torah, back to its origins, which is his own Rebbe. And that's the greatest kovod, that's the greatest honor, and that's the greatest hakoros hatov that a Talmid can show to a Rebbe altogether. Then we have the broad framework, the function of the Talmid-Rav relationship, the fact that it is not merely a means to acquiring knowledge. One can get knowledge from art scrolls, and one can get knowledge from Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and one can get knowledge from all sorts of places. It's not the business of Torah, is not just the business of acquiring knowledge. The business of Torah is the applying of one's full personality into establishing a communion, there is no better word, an intimately close relationship with God Himself. And that can only be done if one is Mekabel Torah. And in order to be Mekabel Torah, there are only two ways that you can practically receive Torah. Either by being on Mount Sinai, which opportunity is no longer granted to us, it was only granted to one person, and that was Moshe Rabbeinu. And subsequently, since we weren't on Sinai, our only chance of being Mekabel Torah is to be Mekabel from somebody who was on Sinai. Or somebody who was Mekabel from somebody who was on Sinai, or 3 generations down, or 4, or 10, or 50, or 100 generations down. It doesn't matter. But there has to be that. And that's why the consistency of approach in the learning of Torah is so important. It cannot be chaotic. There are dozens of different approaches in Torah, and they're all very good and very nice, as long as there's Kabbalah. But there can't be Kabbalah when I go here to learn, and I go there to learn, and I go somewhere else to learn, and I run around to learn all over the place. So where's the Kabbalah? Where am I being Mekabel? There can be Kabbalah only one at a time. I can be Mekabel in one place, and when I'm finished there, I can move to another place, and I can be Mekabel there. But I can't be Mekabel two places at the same time, because then one ends up with an awful mess. If Torah was just the accumulation of factual knowledge, then the more shiurim you attended, the better it would be. spend all your days and nights attending millions of shiurim and you'll accumulate more and more knowledge. That would be the best thing to do. In fact, it wouldn't even be necessary to do that. Just buy yourself a computer and ask people all over the world to put in information to the computer and you can have access to it. It would also be just as good. You would have it all at your fingertips, literally. But that's not what Torah is all about. Torah is being mekabel, acquiring an approach, establishing a relationship with God through one's learning. And one can only do that if one's learning consistently, and one's learning in an approach which is authentic. And for that, one has to do it slowly, and one has to do it with depth, and one has to do it with consistency. And now quantity does not become the important thing, not quantity of shiurim, not how many shiurim you attend, and not how much you cover in each year. What now becomes important is how you listen, with what depth you understand the text that you're busy studying. How deep can you go into that depth, into that text? To what extent have you been given the mechanism and the means of being able to reveal the depths of that text? That's what's important, and that's what's critical, and that's what needs to be achieved primarily. We'll leave that there. What I wanted to do next week, Kimir Tashem, is back to our Koros HaTov. I said to you I was going to discuss the human and emotional power that HaKoros HaTov is a midah, ability to recognize appreciation and to express it. As we discussed last week, we'll discuss next week what that does to a human being, what being a Makir Tov does to a human being, what power a human being has when he is a Makir Tov, and how impotent he is when he is not a Makir Tov. So we'll go back to the principle of HaKoros HaTov, and that really will round off this whole series, which revolves around the importance and the nature of what it is we're doing in the Torah world.